Welcome to the SMY Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Bader. In our last episode, we dove into the new K-5 curriculum for literacy standards that result from a new law passed in Wisconsin called Act 20. Today, I want to talk about the other end of the spectrum, about high school literacy. This comes up because this week I've been getting a whole bunch of photos from one teacher in particular, Maggie Jordan, of her students reading of Mice and Men. It got me interested in what our students do in 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, and where those standards come from and how we keep things interesting for our older students, and also where teachers get their motivation and what they think about when they're building their classes. So joining me first is Maggie Jordan, and then she's new to the district, but she's been an educator for 10 years. She's been here in South Milwaukee for 2 years. And then John LaRoe, who has been with the district going on 29 years. So super excited to hear what they say and the energy they bring. First, let's start with Maggie Jordan. Maggie Jordan, an English teacher at South Milwaukee High School. Thanks for being here.
I'm so excited. Thank you.
We were thrown together this week because you shared some photos of your students, 10th grade students, reading of Mice and Men to each other, or out loud, I guess, a dramatic reading, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that got me thinking that we talked about elementary literacy last podcast, in the last episode. It got me wondering just kind of what modern, literacy looks like for high school students.
That's a very valid question. So just speaking to Of Mice and Men first. Mm-hmm. So chapter 5, there's this infamous barn scene. And in the barn, one of the main characters kills another main character in a barn. And so for this unit, I decided to bring in hay. And we were going to read in the pod sitting on hay bales. And it was honestly magical how much hay brought the literature to life.
I was wondering about the hay bales and all the pictures. I thought, oh, the people in the pod are decorating for fall. Or it was specifically for this.
Yes, this is specifically for Of Mice and Men. And just the amount of chatter and questions that a simple hay bale could bring up also drew into this appeal or this excitement. And so yesterday for chapter 5, we did that in the pod, pretending we were in the barn. And luckily, for weather-wise, today we got a beautiful day, and the final scene of the book is down in the brush, and luckily South Milwaukee is covered with brushy areas,
yeah.
So we were able to go outside today and read that final scene. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to, so if we could back up 1 second.
Yeah.
So tell us about Of Mice and Men, if people haven't read it, and what, why 10th graders, it's appropriate for 10th graders.
Totally. That's a very valid question. So actually, this is one of the very few novels that we read as an entire class. So Of Mice and Men is a novella. It's centered in the 1930s by John Steinbeck. And it's just the story of true friendship. And they're chasing this American dream, which unfortunately they never get to achieve. And so this story is really great to start off sophomore year because it draws on all of the skills that they learned from their 9th grade year. And we get to take a look at them together. And because it's so short, we're able to fly through it within the first month of school so we can really get into research and get our hands to where we need to be. And so it's nice to start off as a whole class novel, and we won't see another whole class novel until second semester. So the students will be choosing choice books. And then if we look at their 9th grade year, their 9th grade year was more short stories or short nonfiction articles. The only full class reading that we did was Romeo and Juliet, which was another great way to have students acting out and putting their own modern adaptation to the end, and also another, fateful ending.
I think I got my prom date reading out loud reading Romeo and Juliet out. She was Benvolio.
Okay. I yeah. love that. Yeah.
That's my, I remember doing that in 11th grade. So, mm-hmm. so that's more of a 10th grade thing.
Yeah. yeah. And so then, yeah. so with Romeo and Juliet, we did the biggest cheese competition to see who could give a cheesier pickup line for Romeo. And so I selfishly love classroom books because we can have these very authentic real life moments. And when students have a book that they choose, the hope is that they get super into it, but then we can't have these shared experiences of communal reading or communal inside jokes that you wouldn't get unless you were reading that specific novel.
Yeah, that's kind of my question. It sounds like a pretty heavy chapter to do as a group read in a
totally.
Circle. How did they react to that? I mean, that's a very serious part of the book, right?
Yeah, they are such serious scenes, but I think that life is super serious, and so it's like talking through these serious moments and like having the tools and the strategies in order to dive into the heavy, right? Because sometimes life gets super heavy, and if you don't have the tools to talk about these things, then they like fester inside. And so creating those spaces to dive into these themes, I find to be super helpful.
Sure. And I guess I would say in popular culture, those kind of things are, those scenes are pretty predominant, right? You watch anything
Absolutely.
On TV, it's like that. But to read it in a group like that, it's very intimate. Mm-hmm. And I would think it'd be very engaging
yeah.
for a student who, you know, we always think of them as jaded, but they're not. They want to be engaged, right?
Absolutely. And it brings literature to life. And I think other subjects, or especially English, the project is writing. And so to make literature 3D, or to like be acting with like our bodies and our like full selves, I think that helps engage students who might not necessarily like English. Mm. And so over the past few days, it's been really nice to see certain kids shine who normally are a little sleepy behind their desk or not really engaged, being like, I hate writing or I hate reading. This kind of brings that to life.
Hmm. And how does, I mean, tell us generally, like for 10th graders, what mm-hmm. are the goals of the year? What do we...
Totally. So the English department is super, super great. And I'm just going to come up here. We have all of our learning targets, and I don't know why I'm talking to the microphone
okay.
as if it's a live video. But so every year the English department sits down and we take a handful of skills that we want students to master at the end of each course. And so we look at what 9th graders are doing, and then we scaffold up to say, okay, this is what they should be doing by 10th grade, this is what they should be doing by 11th grade and 12th grade, and so on. And so we set aside these power standards to make sure that we're hitting them. Mm. And so as we're looking at our standards, it's like really the sense of building on what they started last year. And so looking at this first unit, why it's super great is we have a lot of those same skills of like finding textual evidence or being able to clearly state an argument. Mm. And now we're going to be taking it to the next level with research in terms of now you have to synthesize this and be creating your own idea.
Interesting. So just for our listeners, could you yeah. read maybe one or two of those?
Totally. Like, so students will assess and utilize textual evidence to analyze character, theme, and other literary elements and make references. And so looking at this, our textual evidence or analyzing characters, taking these scenes and acting it out, like why would this character, George, have chosen to kill his best friend, Lenny? Like what were his choices and was he justified in doing that? Mm. And so another one would be an example of students will evaluate validity and argument across multiple accounts in a variety of texts. So looking at that one, that will be our next unit. That will be research. Mm. And so now we have the one text of Mice and Men. And now in our next unit, we're going to be having them take these themes and say, where do we see this in 2024? And so it's very beautiful because now they're going to be analyzing their own lives or their lives in South Milwaukee and saying, What do these sources say about identity? What do these sources say about socioeconomic status? What do these themes say about myself? And so it's very exciting where we're headed.
And you taught freshmen last year, yes. Right? So So are these the same students you're seeing them again?
I have half and half. So I would say I have half of the same students that I had last year, and it's a joy to have them back. And then I have half that are new to my class, but not new to South Milwaukee.
Got it. So yep. You could build on those skills, right? And
totally.
You know at least half of them and where they were at the end of the year.
Yeah, and it's so great to watch this growth and this progression and this maturity.
Mm. And then what else do we do in 10th grade? What else do students do? You started the year with this novella, mm-hmm. and then you said it's kind of research projects. When they sum it up, what's it going to look like in June?
Yeah, that's a very fair question. We talk more about like literary analysis and rhetoric and literary criticism. And so those are like the main three things that we're transferring up.
Okay. So this is one part of their experience in South Milwaukee High School in the English department. What are the other experiences that they have?
The English department, I could speak so highly of each of my colleagues, and it's just so great to be a part of the English department. So English 9 and English 10 are just the standard, if you want to call them survey courses, where you get a smattering of everything. And so that's English 9 and 10. And then their 11th and 12th grade year, they get a little bit more choice and a little bit more opportunity. Also, sorry to leave out honors English 9 and now English 10 has moved to AP Seminar, which is super great. That was not an offering for English 10 last year. And so 11th and 12th grade year, we have AP Research. We have AP Literature. We have so many AP classes. I'm blanking on them. But in regards to the writing electives for English, we have three writing electives. We have composition, media studies, and journalism. Mm. And so these three choice English classes that you can take in as an 11th and 12th grader really focuses on writing skills. Katie Swanson has a really, really great composition class that focuses on writing for a various amount of mediums, but I think she does a really great job because students who hate writing will leave her class feeling more empowered and confident to write. Mm. And so that's just so great to see. And then media studies is, obviously I'm biased because that's the class that I teach, but media studies has us really looking at the media. And I just think that teens are so invested in their screens and what's happening. And so it's our job to teach them to identify this bias, or it's our job to teach them how to look at all of these messages and kind of parse through creating meaning of that and what knowing or unknowing messages are being sent. So we have a really fun time in media studies. This year we added a TikTok unit just because I have no idea what TikTok is, and so I gotta see what all of this buzz is about. And just like the power of what these messages are being sent in scroll time. And it's been really great with our cell phone policy to talk about like the addictiveness of screen time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess it's awesome to see how their emotions are validated, but only shows the more important reason why we have the caddies.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that makes sense. And they'll kind of see maybe the adult take on why.
Totally.
Why that is, yeah.
And then our two literature courses are diverse authors and writers, and the other literature course is themes in literature.
Mm.
And so those two courses focus more on the reading aspect as opposed to the writing aspect. So once you get out of your freshman and sophomore year, a lot of windows open as to what's possible.
Yeah, that is really interesting. You know, my high school did not have that. I was an honors English student, but there were not electives in the for that. Like, these sound fascinating, these classes, as an English geek, sound really interesting to me.
Absolutely, and I just think of my 12th grade year, I was stuck in British literature, and we read Middle English and Beowulf, and I'm not saying that doesn't have its time and place, and, like, as an English person, I can geek out for that, but that's not everybody's jam, right? And so I think that what is super unique about our department is that you do get that choice of what sounds interesting to you. And students can really tailor their experience to what they want to get better at. And so I think writing, no matter what your profession is, if you struggle with that, like, this is where we need to take you. So outside of this building, you can be successful, whether you are a nurse writing up reports or a police officer writing up reports. There are just so many reports to be written. And so they need to know how to do those things.
Sure. And and emails and being taken seriously, and then, you know, resume writing, or just, like I said, any communication you may have, being able to write effectively is key.
Right? Absolutely.
Yeah, joining us on the podcast is John Leroux, one of Maggie's colleagues. John, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Tell me what you teach here. How long have you been in South Milwaukee?
So I teach English here at the high school, and I am starting my 29th year here in the district. So I've been around the block for a while here.
Yeah. What grades or classes do you teach now?
Right now I have a few sections of the sophomore English. So Ms. Jordan and I work together with the sophomore curriculum. And then I'm teaching Diverse Voices in Literature, which is a junior-senior combined elective.
Okay. What I'd hope to have a conversation about is maybe you could expound on the conversation we had about curriculum standards. How do you guys as a department decide even where to start with your ninth graders and walk it out to 12th graders?
Well, a lot of it comes from the Common Core state standards, you know, because, you know, we have a list of standards. This is what the state says by the time a student is finished with whatever grade. These are benchmarks they should be hitting. So a lot of our curriculum development came from there. There are subtle differences from grade to grade, but that's really where we kind of started. Because, you know, this question of, okay, well, what do we teach and how we teach it, you know, those decisions need to be aligned with some standard somewhere. It can't just be, you know what, I think I'm just going to do this for no particular reason with no particular
desired outcome. And so where do we want students to be in by the time they leave here? Like, what can we say through an English program that we want students to know?
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing. I think when you think about it from that perspective, I think the best way to explain it is to kind of because we have a number of students who are going directly from South Milwaukee High School into four-year colleges. Are those students equipped to be successful in reading and writing at the college level and not just get by, but they'll manage very well? Students who are maybe not going the four-year route, it's not like they don't need to have a basic set of literacy skills. You know, can they read effectively? Can they be critical readers? And, you know, can they be critical consumers of the information they're reading? Can they go beyond just saying, this is a piece about something? Can you dig below the surface? Can you articulate the themes behind that? Writing-wise, at the academic level, are you prepared for academic writing? If you're not going the academic route, are you prepared in the workplace? Can you communicate effectively with whatever sort of writing you would need at the workplace? And that's, I guess that's a kind of mixed bag, because, you know, every student has individual needs. And I think the easiest way to say is, whatever your individual needs and where you see yourself going, can we help provide that for those students?
When you start with those state curricula, is it like a checklist by 12th grade students should be X, Y, and Z, or is it more nuanced than that?
Well, I think a checklist is a pretty decent way to look at it. If you look at the Common Core state standards, which is, I mean, you can look at it online, you know, you'll have a pretty massive list of literacy writing, you know, communication standards that students should be able to accomplish.
And then, Ms. Jordan was saying that as a team, you guys look at those and each year, maybe it's each year, or how often do you look at them, and when are they due for a refresh?
Well, it's kind of an ongoing process. I mean, we're fortunate in the English department that we have a group of people who've been really willing to work over the summer and really do some hardcore collaboration. Like, what do we want to do? What does ninth grade English need to look like? Where are the things that they seem good at? Where are the things that when we see students coming from the eighth grade, what do they need a little bit of extra focus on? Because in a perfect world, every kid walks out of eighth grade in any school on the planet going, I can do all these things that eighth graders can do. But the reality is, some kids are better at some things that, you know, there are deficiencies. So we have to, on one hand, here's what we want, but also let's look at where they are, because we might need to adjust some things based on what we're seeing trend-wise.
Got it. And what is the creativity for you as an educator? 30 years in the field, when you take those, how do you keep interested in it, and how have you refined your craft?
That's a good question. I think in terms of the interest, I am the kind of person, I'm always looking at new things that I can use that might be more engaging or thought-provoking for students, maybe things that are more time-bound. For example, in Diverse Voices, I've got a little bit more leeway with that because, you know, there isn't necessarily a here's the canon of Diverse Voices books that kids have been reading since the 1940s. It's more of a, all right, what can we use that will give students a sort of overview of different perspectives from people and communities and walks of life that they might, you know, they themselves might not be very familiar with. You know, for example, as I tell my students, like we're reading a piece written from the perspective of a young woman whose mother is Mexican, born in America, and whose father immigrated from Mexico. And I say, well, I don't know what that's like, okay, because I'm neither the above. I'm just a guy born out in the country in South Carolina. So I don't really understand what it's like to be the child of immigrants, to be someone whose primary language wasn't English. But it's important for me to understand things like that. It's important for me to understand the sort of challenges and obstacles and life that people live outside of my own kind of narrow tunnel. Mm. Now, that's also nice because, as we well know here in South Milwaukee, we do have many students who are sons and daughters of immigrants, you know, first-generation American students. Mm-hmm. So those students are able to read and understand and appreciate something like that differently, because even if the student over there in that third desk isn't a Mexican-American, maybe they're Serbian, but they have an experience of, I know what it's like to come to the United States and have to assimilate to a new culture, to learn the norms, to learn things that aren't really obvious to me. And that's a steep learning curve. But at the end of the day, it's a fun class to teach. And I find that really fascinating because it forces me, by nature of the topics, I'm always kind of hustling, looking for new things like, hey, this would be good, you know. And there's not ever a moment in that class where I feel like, I've got enough, we're good here. It's always, what else can I find? Mm-hmm. You know, now at the sophomore level, you know, we do have certain things that we've kind of been sticking with, but there's also room for, can I pull in some things that relate to that? Maybe, okay, we're reading Of Mice and Men right now. Can I pull in something that relates to the world today that might give students an extra layer of understanding about the struggles and the obstacles that migrant workers during the Depression faced that might be more relevant in the year 2024? And I'm a curious person. I'm always looking for more information on things, just because I recognize, as I tell my students, if you don't look beyond your narrow little tunnel, you miss everything out there. And I grew up in a narrow little tunnel, and there was a lot of stuff out there. And just by my life experiences, I didn't have a lot of exposure to a lot of things growing up in a small town in the country in South Carolina. So as an adult, I've kind of made it my mission, like, I need to learn as much of what's outside the tunnel. And so I try to share a lot with my kids so they get a sense of, there's a bigger tunnel than any of us maybe are aware of.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I could see, if, as a curious person, how you can adapt to those needs. How have students changed since you started teaching? You kind of hinted at that at some of the topics that you're discussing, but maybe they're not. Oh, students have never really been interested in the classics until they really get a deep read into them. But what are the attitudes? What do they need with today that they didn't need before, or what do they need then that they don't need now?
Well, I think one of the things that I believe about all students, and I believe this is true as much now as it was in 1992 when I started teaching, and it might have been true in 1922. Every kid wants to be successful, right? No student wants to come to class and ring up zeros. So part of our challenge is to figure out how we can help them be successful. And trying to help kids succeed by forcing them to read archaic texts that they can't really connect to is hard. So to me, the big thing that is changing is when we were kids, like there really wasn't much of a question. Like, here are the things you read. Not a lot of real work about how these relate to the real world. It's like, these are the golden text. You know, Moses delivered these down from the mount and carved in tablets. This is what we read in 8th grade. This is what we read in 9th grade. This is 10th grade. And there wasn't a lot of variety or anything. And I think the one thing that students maybe need now more than ever is they need the variety, because, you know, human attention spans are changing. And that's not me being the old man yelling at the clouds. That's just an honest assessment of the world around us. People don't have the attention spans that they had 30 or 50 years ago. We have a lot of distractions. So I think one of our challenges as educators is, how do we find things that are, A, going to be able to capture their attention, but not just in an, because I can entertain people all day long, but that's not the goal here. The goal is, I want to hold your attention, but also force you to think, force you to look beyond the surface and ask critical questions. And I mean, I'll use anything that I think will accomplish that goal.
Yeah, sure. And Ms. Jordan and I were talking about her media studies class and just how there's a section on TikTok, and there are some really creative people that are using literary themes in these short form videos. I can totally see how they're adaptable to, a classroom or something that you could teach. How do you, it kind of gets down to, you said every kid wants to be successful. How do you assess, you've had some big concepts, big ideas here that we've talked about. A lot of it's pinned on curiosity. How do you assess how a student's doing? How do they know how they're doing?
Aside from, because obviously you have to write a paper or create some sort of summative project is one way, but a lot of it comes down to the sort of individual conversations that you have with kids. And one of the things I try to do a lot of, because we know in a class of 25 or 30 kids, there are going to be some students who will dominate conversations. They've always got the hand up. They always want to add stuff. And it's easy in that case to kind of sense what those students are getting out of the class because they're volunteering all of it. So I think one of the things that I always try to make sure I do is make sure that I'm connecting with students who are quieter, because I don't want you to think that your contributions aren't valuable just because you don't raise your hand. And that's where it's nice from a technology standpoint to even do simple things like allow students, like put a comment in the stream, right? Because not every kid's going to want to raise a hand, or because you're drawing attention to yourself, or
there's a lot of social vulnerability there.
You can put a comment in the stream, and then I can respond to that privately. Hey, that's a great idea. I'm glad you asked that question. When you said that, it made me think of this other thing that are you familiar with this? So it allows for some pretty interesting dialogues, which in a conventional discussion in class, you're not always going to get all of that.
Got it. Yeah. Interesting. How does that, maybe parents know, I don't have a high schooler yet, but what is the online space? It sounds like you have a pretty, at least an avenue, outside of that classroom discussion to have a discussion. What are those tools that you use?
Well, there's really two things. Number one is just the Google Classroom. Sometimes, when we're doing a unit, we'll have like a reflection document, like, okay, so we're going to read a passage a day in class. We might start by saying, okay, well, I want you guys to spend 5 minutes. If the theme of the passage is about overcoming obstacles or about courage, I might say, okay, well, to start off with, I just want you guys to spend about 5 minutes writing about why it's important in life in general to be courageous in difficult situations. If you have an example in your own life, like, well, I had to have courage in this condition or the situation, write about that. But if you don't want to write about yourself, you can just focus on the human condition and say, you know, in general, people in life need to have courage in situations because, and that's fine. And then we do the reading, and then I'll give them a chance. The second part of the document is, all right, now let's look at some of what the text supports. Like, let's start to form some conclusions based on what the author is saying. So that's a primary way, but then I also will sometimes I'll say, okay, here, just leave me a comment in the stream. Like, what's a question you had, or was there something, because, you know, we talk about how reading is a subjective experience, how you and I can read the same page of a text, and something occurs to me that you might just not see at all, and then you might notice something that I might not have really given a second thought to. Mm. So I might put a comment in the stream, hey, when you guys get done with this, leave a comment, something you noticed, a question you had, a connection you can make, so just to kind of inspire them to look at, not everything has to be a full paragraph response, like, hey, you know what, I read and a thing popped in my head. But then I also, and I use this a lot more when we're working on more summative pieces, but I'll also tell students, like, if something pops up, you know, and I get that not every kid wants to ask it in class, you're always, because we have our Google, you know, our Google messaging, like, just pop me a message and say, hey, here's something I was wondering about. Here's a question I have. Here's where I'm stuck on the assignment. So we do, I think we facilitate some of those questions because, I mean, I get it. You know, every student wants to get out of class because we only got about 4.5 minutes before you got to be in your next class. Mm. Or you got to get out of school right after school because you had to go pick up your siblings from school or you got to go to work. Like, not everybody has structured time during the school day, so it's nice to be able to at least have that availability. Mm. Now, mm-hmm. there are limits. I'm not responding to an email at 3 a.m., but, you know, I generally try to, because it's important to have boundaries, I'll try to say, okay, well, if you shoot me an email by 8 or so, I'll hang on and take a look at it. But if you shoot me an email at midnight, there's a better than average chance I will be sleeping because I'm an old man.
Well, I'd say I was pretty generous, 8 p.m.
And that's, you know, it's not like I'm hard on the, you know, on the computer till 8, but I get my work done at home. We've eaten dinner, I've cleaned up, and I've got some time, and I'm reviewing work or whatever. It's not like, as teachers, we all know we have so much work to do. It's not like, okay, as soon as I walk out of the building, I'm free and clear. There are always things on the plate. Mm-hmm. So I always try to carve out some time where I can either get things done for the day or try to get ahead for the next couple of days. And I figure if I'm doing that 7 o'clock to 8:30, just trying to get some things done, if I'm also fielding a couple of messages from students, questions or observations, you know, I can certainly take the clerical work or whatever and just put on the burner for a moment and answer my students' comments.
Yeah. So I'm giving away my age, but I had to turn papers in, you know, in writing, and then they got marked up and sent back. We've talked a lot about reading and response to reading, but can you go into a little bit of writing and what the standards are for writing and how you and the rest of the department shepherd along their writing skills?
Sure. Well, we have, we work together and collaborate on rubrics. So if we're writing literary analysis papers, there's a literary analysis rubric that the department follows. So, which is nice because by the time you're a junior or senior, this isn't the first time you've seen this rubric. Mm. So you already know because you've seen it several times before, these are the expectations. So as we're, even though it's not a physical piece of paper, we're still able to look at, we're still able to make comments, we're still able to refer to the rubric. And it's different because you're right, back in the, you know, the olden days, as the children would say, you know, you got the paper out, there's the red ink bomb, and, you know, you underline mm-hmm. it, you're highlighting, you're doing all these things. But, you know, you can do that with technology. It just, it looks a little different.
Yeah, and I suppose you can get some real back and forth and actually develop something better than having to take that red red letter paperback right. and fix your original document, turn it in again, you guys can see what you're commenting on in almost real time. Right?
Yeah, that's nice. And also, I think the other thing that to me is a real benefit with that is that, you know, our English department policy is that students can resubmit papers. Mm. So, you know, when I tell students, like, hey, you have high expectations for yourself. You want to get an A or B in the class. A C isn't a death sentence, okay? C is you have some good ideas, but we've got some work to do. But let's look at the feedback I gave you. Let's sit down. Let's talk about it. Let's put our heads together. Let's really look at what you have and how that goes from what you're doing right now to, and I understand for students it's how can I better my grade, but it's also how can I become a more effective writer. And I say this to kids all the time. I don't, and I use this phrase loosely, but I tell them, like, I don't particularly care about your grade. That's between you and your family. I care about your growth as an academic writer. And if you focus on the growth, the grades, as sure as I'm sitting here, your grades are going to take care of themselves because you're performing, you're growing. And I'll see that. You'll see that. Anybody who has eyes will see that the work you're doing is paying off.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the grade will improve, but more importantly, you'll be better at what we're trying to get you better at.
So is there anything that I didn't ask you about when it comes to curriculum development or standards for our high school students or some of the classroom activities that you did want to share?
I think the thing I probably just want to highlight is when I look at our department, you know, we have a lot of offerings. You know, when I first started here back in the old building, it was all freshmen take English 9, or English 1, as we called it. All sophomores take one semester of, like, the literary side of English 10, and then communication. So they had a speech, and then a literature and writing. Juniors took English 3, you know, your typical American lit, and then your seniors took English 4, which was world lit, and we had AP English.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, and then there was drama offering, but there wasn't a lot kids could really choose from. And so we made the decision as a department a couple years ago, while looking at the standards, like, so we changed it from at the, so all kids are basically in English 9 or English 10, but then at the junior senior level, in addition to the AP classes they can take, you know, we have diverse voices in literature, we have themes in literature, we have composition, we have media studies, we have journalism, we have different sort of mini, you know, mini blocks, if you will, 18-week courses that aren't forcing every kid to go, okay, every junior has to read Huckleberry Finn, every junior has to read Henry David Thoreau. While I love those, they're not, for the masses, necessarily the most, compelling pieces of reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. As much as that pains me to admit as an English guy, I understand that not every kid loves Ralph Waldo Emerson. All right? I get it. So we did a lot of work to change what we were doing, but we didn't change anything about our adherence to the standards, like the state standards, all the things that we're trying to strive for as far as, like, targets. All that was in place, and we just sort of reimagined how we were going to get to that point.
Mm.
And, you know, so it looks different than it looked 29 years ago when I started. You know, I think my first year teaching juniors was my third year here in the building, so 1998. And at that time, it was English 3, English 4. You know, and that mm-hmm. was just, here are the things we do. And so we're radically different now in terms of the content, but the concepts, the skills, that is where this all comes from. And we put a lot of work in at the department level to make sure that if you're in my diverse voices class, you're doing a certain number of big assessments, and these are things we're targeting. Ms. Krajacek, for example, teaches one of the themes in literature classes. We collaborate all the time. Even though we're teaching different classes, they have the same types of assessments. That we're hitting the same targets. We're just hitting them from different literary perspectives.
Hmm.
And so it's, you know, you look at all that and you think, man, as a department, we've absolutely worked our tails off to make this work for our students. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said that didn't feel good, because it does feel good to know that when we sit in the room together, when we're working on curriculum over the summer, wherever, we've got a lot of people who put a lot of thought, a lot of, you know, we sweat a lot to make this work for our students, and we firmly believe that's good for our kids. So, you know, at the end of the day, I put my head on the pillow at night going, yeah, we're doing what we need to be doing for our kids.
Okay, well, let's leave it there. John LaRoe, thank you so much for being on the SMI podcast.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks.
Well, I promised Maggie Jordan that I would kind of summarize the courses that are available, and it is an impressive list. So worth reading, I think. English 9 and 10, there's English 9, English 9 Honors, English 10, and then AP Seminar. And then for 11th and 12th graders, there's AP Language and Composition, AP Literature and Composition, AP Research, Composition, Diverse Voices in Literature, Journalism, Publication Writing, Media Studies, and Themes in Literature. If you are a student or a parent of one of these, of a high school student, definitely dive in and ask a guidance counselor about these courses or talk to your student about what they might be interested in, far and beyond, you know, what I experienced. And it'd be really exciting for my kids to experience. Thanks again to Maggie Jordan and John LaRoe for coming on the podcast. And thank you to the rest of their department. There are many weren't on the podcast, but I appreciate all their work. This has been the SMA podcast. If there is a future episode you'd like to hear, please email info@sdsm.k12.wi.us. Thanks again, and we will see you next time.